Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/know-how. That's lynda.com/know-how. And by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere, on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/know-how to start your free 2-week trial. That's HuluPlus.com/know-how. It's a content extravaganza. On this episode, you'll know how to green screen, how to do speed, and how to do motion. Okay, I'll walk. We're walking. We're down. Hi, I'm Ayaz. I'm going to do a push-up. You don't see me right now, but I just do 20 push-ups. All right, here's a pull-up. Oh, look at that. I'm lifting 30 pounds of weight. Ah, I'm awesome. Okay, now I go back to the set. Hi, and welcome to Know How. It's Twit's how-to show, where we take a couple of interesting projects, throw it your way, and give you the knowledge to make some magic. I'm Father Robert Ballester, the digital Jesuit. My co-host, Ayaz Akhtar, is out right now. He's actually on the top of the Himalayas looking for a secret cache of Dogecoins. Now, in his place, we've got an action-packed episode filled with all the cool things you can do if you're a content producer to spice up your creations. We've got green screen, we've got Adobe Premiere, we've got motion and speed, the little tips and tricks that we've learned over the years to spice up your video production. So let's get started. Now, the last time we did Adobe Premiere, I showed you the basics. It was Adobe Premiere 101. I showed you how to take assets and put them into Adobe Premiere. I told you how to clip those assets and put it onto your timeline. I showed you how to do a minimal amount of effects and transitions. This time, I want to give you something a bit more. I'm going to show you how to actually modify those clips to make it a more compelling video, and then how to render it out to the real world. Now, let's talk about rendering. If Brian will switch over to my screen, when you've got your Adobe timeline, you're going to see different colors in this bar right here. Let me drop a video onto my timeline, just like we did in the previous episode. Now, you'll notice that this is red, okay? There are three colors that you're going to see on this timeline. There's red, there's yellow, and then there's green. I dropped this other clip. It should come up yellow. Red means, look, I'm going to have to do transcoding in real time. I'm going to try to do my best to play this thing, but it may not quite come out right. Yellow means Adobe is guessing that the transcoding is not going to take up that much processing time, and it's probably going to be able to do all of that in real time. You're not going to get a whole lot of jumpiness. Whenever you see green, green means that Adobe actually has a render file. It has done all the calculations ahead of time so that everything happens smoothly when you play this back in real time. This is important because this is going to define what your workspace looks like. Whenever I'm creating a project, I try to keep as much as green as possible because it will give me more of a feel for how my clip actually looks without all the jerkiness of the transitions. This is especially important if your editing machine isn't that powerful. You're going to want to pre-render everything so that you're not having that audio sync problem, so that you don't do one of those one frame per every 3 seconds deals. You want things to look smooth so that it gives you a better editing experience. That's rendering, but that's just rendering within the workspace. Now I want to show you two things that are basic to Adobe Premiere, something that you're definitely going to want to learn. The first is all about speed. Now, we have the ability with a nonlinear editor like Adobe to play with speed. Right now, this clip of Brian working the TD desk runs for about 7 minutes. I really don't want to run 7 minutes of Brian running the TD desk. So what I can do is move my mouse over the clip that's on my timeline. I right-click, and it will create a menu that includes this feature called speed/duration. If I click that, I can now change the speed, either percentage Or I could give it a duration. I could tell Adobe, I want this thing to be only a minute long or 30 seconds long, and it will adjust everything for me. But because I'm feeling kind of funky, I'm just going to put 999 because I want to increase it by 1,000%. And boom, now suddenly my clip is a lot shorter. Now you'll notice that the clip turned from yellow to red. Now we talked about this in just the previous segment about rendering. That's because Adobe is now saying, I can do this, but that's a lot of data. You're probably going to want to pre-render it. For this segment, I didn't want to have to do any rendering in real time, so I pre-rendered it, and this is what it looks like. I've now taken that seven-minute segment, and when we play it, it looks like this. Now, you may see this effect a lot. Whenever people are doing video production, they like to play with speed, especially if they're dealing with a long and drawn-out sequence. They're going to want to speed it up a little bit so that you don't have to go through everything that they went through when they were shooting it. Now, speeding up is just one of the things that I can do. I can also go the other way. I could slow it down. Right now, I have this clip here that I love. It's basically what happens on a daily basis in the Twit production office. We have, Shannon just practicing her smackability on Greg, because this is basically what we do to Greg. I mean, Greg is here for punching. Okay. But this is a little bit of a boring shot. I mean, yeah, it's kind of fun to have snub, snap, slap Greg, but I want to do something to make it a bit more interesting. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut out the last slap here. And again, I'm using techniques that I taught you in the first Adobe Premiere 101 segment that we did on Know How. I'm going to take that clip and drop it down into my timeline. And I'm going to do the same thing. Right-click that clip, get the speed menu, and I'm going to slow it down to 40%. Now, the reason why I could do this is because I shot it on a camera that is shooting in 1080p, 60 frames a second. So I can slow it down by 40% without losing any of the fluidity of the clip. You need about 29 frames per second. Actually, 24 if you really want to cheat. Which means that if you have one of those GoPro cameras that can shoot in 120 frames per second, you could drop it down to about 20% and you'd still get a nice fluid motion rather than the chunkiness. When I go ahead and render this, I get something that looks and sounds like this. There we go. Thank you, Greg. Okay, now that's one of those tricks that again, editors will use anytime they want to draw attention to a sequence that they've shot. Of course, I could always show Stubbs slapping Greg in full speed, but when I slow it down, it's both funny and maybe I can feel a little bit of time. All right, that's speed. I could speed things up, I could slow things down, but of course, there's more to Premiere. Let me show you something else that pretty much every Adobe editor uses, and that's called motion. We also call it keyframing. One of the things that you can do with Adobe Premiere is you can take a static picture. Let's say this. This is just a regular photograph that we've taken. Now, you'll notice that it's out of frame because it hasn't been scaled. I'm going to scale to frame size. This is what the photo looks like in its actual frame size. But if I play this, it's boring. Why is it boring? Because it's a picture. And how many times have you seen on YouTube where editors put up pictures where there should be video? It's not a good look. Believe it or not, if you add just a tiny bit of motion, it makes it interesting. It makes it feel like it's video, and people will forgive you for having a still picture. The way you do this is you click the clip, you go into the preview window, you click the effects control, and under motion, if we zoom in here, if I drop that down, I have a couple of controls, position and scale. I'm going to toggle animation, and what it does is it gives me these two keyframes. Now, the way Adobe handles keyframes is it says, between two sets of keyframes, whatever you set, I will try to make up the difference. So for this one, if we could zoom back out, my first keyframe is this full frame view of the picture. I'm going to make a second keyframe that's going to be zoomed in. So let's do something like this. And we'll drop it over a little bit and drop it down. So now what I've told Adobe is when I hit this part of the clip, go ahead and start zooming in until I hit that part of the click and then stop. And so instead of a static picture, Now I've got something that actually has a little bit of motion. It's a trick that a lot of editors use whenever they need to fill in. So let's say I'm filming a documentary and I ran out of video. I need to pull in some stock photographs. I can use this to give it just a tiny bit of motion, and it feels okay. It feels much better than looking at a solid static clip. Now, when we do it for real, it looks something like this. So this is actually just two pictures that I've linked together. I put a transition into it like I did in the last episode of Know How. And there we go. I now have two pictures that have been linked together using motion to make it look as if it's a moving video clip. Again, pretty dang handy. The next thing I want to show you is, well, another way to do motion. We've got a clip here that uses moving video, not a static picture, with motion. As you can see, I've got these two keyframes set up. I've got a piece of video that's a time-lapse video, and then I've set up two keyframes, one that's really zoomed in and one that's really zoomed out. Now, instead of just having a boring time-lapse, I have motion in the video along with the time-lapse. This is really, really handy anytime you shoot, let's say, one of those overviews. Let's say you've taken 20 minutes of a video shot, and now you want to move from part to part to part. I actually did that with the video that we did earlier of Brian doing the TD desk. This is using a series of start points. These are all keyframes. So now I can take that one shot that has already been sped up, and it does this. See, I can zoom in from one part, go in for another part with a more additional zooming, maybe scan back over to another part of the frame, stop, and then pull back out. Again, this is one of those things that is made possible by the fact that we shoot in HD. Shooting in HD means there's a lot of data there, a lot of information that is probably not going to get used on a stream like Twit, which is 720p. If I'm shooting 1080, it gives me a little bit of wiggle room with which to play with motion, with zoom, and with speed. Now, there are a few other things that I could show you, but the big thing I need to give you right now is how to take your clips out of Premiere and actually do something with them. So far, all I've shown you is how to edit things inside of Premiere. If I were to save this, believe it or not, it would not save that file. All it would do is save the project. So it saves the instructions for what I was trying to do to the clips. If I actually want to put this into a format that the real world can read, that I could upload to YouTube, I have to do what's called an export. Now, a simple way to do that is to make sure that, if you could zoom in here on my inpoints and my outpoints, these two sliders have to be absolutely where you want to stop and start your video. I'm going to go to the other side here real quick. Because what you're doing is you're telling Premiere, please render the video from the start point to the end point. And then if you zoom back out, I go to File, Export, Media. That will bring up the Adobe Media Encoder. Now, the cool thing about the Adobe Media Encoder, if you go and zoom in, I have a lot of different options. I could choose the format. In this case, I'm using H.264, but I could use Microsoft AVI. I could use MPEG-2. I could use Flash. Any format that you want is pretty much going to be found inside this encoder. And then I can choose the resolution. Twit only uses 720p, so I'm going to use 720p, 29.97 frames per second high quality. This will also tell me how big the final render is going to be. Down here, it shows me that when this is finished, it's going to be 5 megabytes. Once I've got this setting correct, I just go ahead and click queue. And now what it will do is it will queue up this file and go ahead and start rendering it. When it's done, I will now have an MP4 file that I could upload to YouTube, that I could send in an email, that I could put out on the Twitch stream. It's self-contained. It no longer needs the project files or Adobe Premiere. Now, this, again, is very, very basic information, but we're going to build on this foundation. I've shown you in Adobe Premiere 102 how to put assets into the workspace. I've shown you how to do effects and how to do transitions. Now you know how to play with speed, how to play with motion, and how to push those videos out to the real world. We're going to keep coming back over and over and over, and before we're done, you're going to be a video content creation monster. Now, speaking of video content creation monster, Ayaz got together with Pixel Core and shot a video about green screening. We're going to get right to that, but first, I want to take some time to talk about our first sponsor, Lynda.com. Now, you've heard about Lynda.com. If you've watched Know How at all, you know that we're excited by Lynda.com because, well, they teach you what we're trying to teach you. They give you the skills and the intelligence that you need to be able to improve your game. Lynda.com is an online learning company that can help anyone learn creative software and business skills to achieve both their personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of high-quality, current, and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects, including things like software for Excel, Photoshop, Dreamweaver, WordPress, QuickBooks, PowerPoint, from business skills like resume creation, time management, or negotiation. Maybe you want to learn a new hobby like photography, videography, DSLR, video, audio recording, or songwriting. Even if you want to do something like programming, Lynda's got web development, app development, CSS, SQL, and Raspberry Pi. Now, with Lynda, you can improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with technology. They have over 2,000 courses right now with new courses added daily, and their instructors are working professionals, not just in-classroom teachers, but people who have actually been out there, been doing what they're teaching you. They're at the top of their fields, and they're expert teachers. The new courses this week include WordPress 3.8, their new features of distributing iOS applications through the App Store, live sound engineering techniques, On Tour with Rush, and the foundations of photography, Flash. You'll find high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't some YouTubers or vloggers in a back room with horrible lighting and horrible audio. They know that in order to watch a lesson, you actually have to be able to watch the lesson. So they make sure the video and the audio is crystal clear. You also get curated course content. Each Lynda.com course is carefully structured so that users can learn from start to finish or jump to a specific chapter for quick answers. They've got easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answers you need and searchable transcripts, which allow you to search inside a video to save you time and find exactly what you're looking for. Courses for all experience levels cover a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. You can watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device. This is one of my favorite features. I could watch it on my computer, move to my phone, pick up my tablet, and it picks up where I left off, which gives me a better way to learn. I can learn at my own pace, on my own schedule. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to Lynda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's project using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit lynda.com/knowhow to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/knowhow. You can also give the gift of learning this year with a gift membership to Lynda. It's the perfect no wrap, no ship, no hassle, last-minute gift for that know-it-all in your family. Just click the gift membership link at lynda.com/knowhow. And we thank Lynda for their support of know-how. Now, let's get back over to Ayaz. He's taking a break from his busy Dogecoin schedule to teach you a little bit about green screens.
I've got this ridiculous smile because we're in Alex Lindsay's Pixel Core green screen studio in Petaluma, right across from our Twit studios. Alex, I'm really glad you're here because every time I'm outside and I see this green screen lit, I'm like a moth. I'm like, it's so pretty. But before we talk about the green screen stuff, we should talk a little bit about you. Right. If people don't know who you are and what you've done, like, I don't know, being a founder of Pixel Core, mm-hmm. could you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I started writing computer programs when I was about 10 on a trash 80, I guess the TRS-80. And then moved to Macs, and then I got into radio, and then I got into TV, and then I ended up at Lucasfilm and then ILM, and where I did visual effects. I did a big shiny ship for a space movie for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I started DV Garage and Pixel Core and Rebel Unit, which are a couple companies that do a variety of different things. We've done a lot of training on visual effects, so 3D and green screen and all kinds of other effects that are related to, you know, recreating reality in some way, shape, or form. Right now, we do an awful lot of live streaming, mm-hmm. mostly because we were trying to figure out how to train everybody online, and we got good at figuring that out, and then people hired us to do it for them. So we still do a lot of green screen, but we also do a lot of live streaming, and that's kind of our business.
Yeah, so if folks aren't familiar with green screens, what's it used for? I know the biggest example is always the weatherman.
Right.
But these days, it's gotten a lot different. I mean, if you look at some like a clip from like the Avengers, there's like three people, all green. What's going on there?
So, you know, obviously the big thing that we're doing is we're going to take whatever's green, we're going to replace it with something else. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're trying to get done. So the reason we use, a lot of people ask, green or blue or red, you know, or why isn't purple? I mean, you can really use a lot of different colors. We don't use red because red looks like our skin. And so what we're doing is we're trying to remove something.
If you remove that red, you have holes in people's faces.
Exactly.
It looks really bad.
That won't work at all. You know, so and there are some visual effects that use red, that have used red for certain things, but it's very, very unusual. There's a... and there's been a lot of different experimentations of how to do this, and there's a yellow, you know, sodium vapor process that Disney used to use for Mary Poppins and everything else, but most of this went to blue and green.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, blue was kind of mostly popular in film, green was very popular in video because of the way that the different mediums, you know, handled the image. But basically, we're taking one of the primary colors, red, green, or blue, so those are the three choices that we have. Then we decide blue or green. The reason that most people now use green is because it has a lot less grain. So whether you're using film, and especially if you're going digital, you're going to end up with less grain, and that means your better edges, finer hair, all those other things in green. The blue channel tends to get a lot of the, just because of the way things are processed, it tends to be a lot grainier, and so you won't get as fine a key.
So that grain, so when you're trying to remove that different colors, you're actually going to see, it might look like one giant color, but the graininess is going to make it slightly different blue hues, I guess.
Well,
and that makes it a little different,
right? The big thing is it's on the edges.
Right.
So if things are grainy on the edge is all that matters. The inside part, this whole inside part,
that's easy.
The outside part is easy. Garbage mat, and you're done. The hard part is the hairs, the little fine, you know, that's where you get a great key or not a great key. Is dealing with those all the little fine tunes and spill. So one of the reasons a lot of people use blue for a long time was that it was easier to get rid of what was called the blue spill rather than the green spill, because the green spill oftentimes was very bright, you know, and so it's harder to get rid of it. Back when we had analog tools and not very good digital tools, but now we have really great tools for removing that.
Now, spill is obviously that when the light itself is landing on us. Right now, we've got a bit of green spill on us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see us looking a little green and hulkish, we're not angry. This is just spill, and this is something that needs to get removed over time.
Right.
And that's we'll talk about how to set that up, too.
And one of the things about spill is you just think about that whole wall is one big light source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's bouncing light, but it really is a big light. And so if it's a light up here, some of it's you know, as it's coming out, it's got a higher angle on our shoulders. And so, it's of course, some of that green is going to show up on the shoulders. You don't usually see it. If I look at you right now, I don't really see it. But you will once you remove all the green that's behind you.
Exactly.
Then I'll start seeing it. And so getting rid of that turns out to be one of the more challenging things. I mean, getting a good key, obviously, is important. But then being able to get rid of all that spill becomes the next big thing that you have to worry about.
So when we're actually setting up a green screen, obviously mm-hmm. you've done a beautiful job here.
Mm-hmm.
What's like the first thing that you're looking for? What's the first thing you're doing?
Well, the big thing is evenness. You know, so what you want is you want it to be even across the board. Now, there are certain things when you watch all those visual effects, stuff, you'll see different greens all over the place.
Yes.
They have another tool or another person called a rotoscoper. So a rotoscoper is someone who does rotoscoping, literally draws a line around somebody every single frame, throughout the movie. And about 80% of visual effects shots have some rotoscoping somewhere in them. And that's because the green wasn't perfect. And so someone just went in there and just by hand cleaned it up.
So if you're not doing it in pre-production or production, you're going to be paying for it in post-production. That's
rotoscoping. That's expensive. Those guys are, you know.
Frame by frame, that's what, 24 frames a second in films.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a lot of freaking work.
And there's tools that do it. So there's tools that will track your edges. You know, so there's tools like Mocha and a variety of other ones that will track. You know, a lot of that silhouette is a very popular tool, among rotoscopers. And so there's ways to do that somewhat automated, but still just an enormous amount of work and an incredible attention to detail that's required to make that work. And that's used a lot. So when you see visual effects shots, those aren't as good an example because they have a whole team that is going to be managing that later. The hardest shots will be done by their main team, and then the easier shots will be done in India. so the... Anyway, so... when we're trying to do something, let's say for corporate or education or news or you know, our podcast, you know, what we're trying to do is have something that's fairly basic. Now, this is, you know, we're not, this is not a shooting day for us, and so there's it's a little dirty down at the bottom. This isn't something we would normally have here when we're actually doing a shoot. So you can see a little dust across mm-hmm. the bottom. We have to do some paint touch-ups because we're starting to crack a little bit here. So
you've got you have sheetrock that's been bent.
This was wood.
Oh, this is wood.
It's a sheetrock up at the top.
Okay.
And then it curves into what we call a cove with wood. Now what we used, that's what we used here because we didn't have a lot of money, and so so we did it ourselves. What we did in our studio in Rwanda is that we actually got a company called ProPsych, and they make fiberglass ones,
okay.
That or rubber and plastic, something, some high impact plastic, that's perfect. And so ProPsych is if you have the resources, ProPsych is the way to go. If you don't, then you make it yourself. The reason you do this is so that you don't have a corner,
right? And that'll have a big light issue. It's gonna have a big dark spot,
a
right
big
there.
Dark line that you have to deal with. Now another way to handle that, and for years we did green screen that were full body without a cove, and what we did is we took a 6-inch tube and took a green screen that's like Lycra and just rolled it up over the tube and then ran it here, and it made just a nice little line that was easy for us to get rid of.
That's a good trick.
You can also get, there are also, you know, you can take a green screen cloth and just hang it out like this and kind of pull it out, and you won't end up with that edge as well. So there's a lot of different ways of doing it. Obviously, you're going to do a lot of it. Then you use something like, you build something so that you can do it, because a lot of what we have is so that you can do mass quantities of it, you know. So that's the first thing. The next thing, of course, is that you want to have your light be very even, you know. And so we've got, these are Kinaflow 4x4s, so there's four bulbs, and they're 4 feet long. That's why we tend to call them 4x4s. And there's a lot of names for them, but the these also have green bulbs in them. So it's kind of hard to see, but if you look at this one here and then look at those ones there, you'll notice that these look really green. And I don't know how much the camera will pick up, but you look this and then look at those ones over there. So these are actually green bulbs. So it's green on green. That creates a very, very, very pure green.
So a nice, you know, consistent us. Green to remove eventually. What about up top? Oh, I'm sorry. You should keep going because you've got expert knowledge. And
yeah. Like, no, all I was going to say is that the secret is the bulb, not as much the... So what you can get away with, if you, you know, for a shoot at home, mm-hmm. you can get away with buying these bulbs and then going to Walmart and buying, like, a two by... Because they have 4 foot, you know, enclosures. But put the green bulbs in them, and the only problem with those is that the ballast isn't very good, so it won't last very long. And it also has a very low cycle rate, so it's going at 60... hertz, mm-hmm. you know, with this one goes at hundreds of hertz, so that way we don't see any flickering.
Okay, so if you actually use those bulbs in a lower cost enclosure, you're going to have flickering. That's going to be picked up by your camera.
You might have flickering.
Okay, so you might have.
You may not. So, but you know, and I know some guys in the Pixel Corps that will get these bulbs, go get there and buy new ballasts, which are how they power the lights. Mm-hmm. And so they retrofit them, and they, you know, they build their own. And if you have more time than money, that's a good way to kind of run down that
path.
We're
gonna have to build that, guys.
Anyway, yeah. So anyway, but these are great. These are, you know, and a key, of course, what we do here is that they're about the same distance from the wall. They're about the same distance from each other. So, and what we're doing is we're trying to make this as even as possible. Now we do this. We're typically using video scopes to kind of figure out the evenness of that process.
And that'll show you, like, with little lines and things and how.
Yeah, exactly where those things are. But we want it to be as green as possible. And we want it to be so the red and the blue should look as far away from the green as possible. And we want it to be as even as possible, because the unevenness, if we have vignetting, so it's darker around the edges, or all those things are going to, I mean, I always think of it as you have about $256. You know, it's 256 levels of gray in an 8-bit image. And you have, so think of it as $256. When your green isn't perfectly green, let's say your green is at 180, which would be typical. You've now spent $76. You know, so when the red and the blue are close to the green and you have to get rid of those, you've now spent another $50. And if you get down to $1, you end up with this really chunky edge. And so you want to have as much of that. You want to be as stingy as you can at every level. If you spend a lot of time, especially if you're going to shoot something that's an hour long or half an hour long or something like that, for a long time we were doing 10 or 15 hours of red green screen, red footage, green screen a month. And you had to get, if you didn't get efficient, you get behind really quickly. So we worry very much about, a lot of the reason we tune the screens is because we have to do our own, and it's our hours either way.
And you use a video scope to check this stuff out.
Yeah, I think I have one over here, actually. Let me, let's see if we can pop this up real quickly here. So we're...
the camera's live, but I didn't realize that.
Yeah, this camera's live here. So what you can see here, if we step out of the way here, what you see here is a very, very nice... scope, and this is just using scope box here, so this is a nice flat line, and it's fairly thin, and that tells us that our green screen is fairly. Let's see if I pull out another one here. Let's see if I add an RGB parade. So this is the RGB parade. Now, what we're seeing here is while that line is good, and this is the red and the blue, and those are good. The problem with this right now is that our green is a little bit overexposed. So so the issue that we have here is that the green itself is peaking. And I can walk over here if this is easier for you to look at here. This green here is peaking, which means we're actually too bright.
Okay.
So this would, while this looks great to our naked eye, at 80%, we probably have a good idea that we're probably a little too bright, because with green screen, this should probably be closer to 60 or 70. And the reason is because this will go here. So what we'll do here is I'll go over to this here. We'll switch this to iris, and we will close down our iris a little bit. And you can see it if you look over on that monitor over there. You'll see as I open and close it, you'll see that green going up and down. So I'll bring that green down a little bit. We'll just leave it there for now. But that is, that allows, and having that monitor up, having the scopes up, is the key to the operation. You can get, scope boxes is very inexpensive in all scopes. There's another program called Conduit, which we worked with Lacquer FX for a long time, and those scopes are free. But having scopes, and you might have them in Final Cut, and a lot of other live programs will have some kind of scopes. Mm-hmm. But that helps a lot as far as figuring that stuff out. If you watch, here, let me hide this here. I'll move this over here.
I wish I knew about scopes when I was doing this at home in the basement.
Yeah. So if you watch this, watch what happens actually, I'll just turn a couple of these off and you'll see it.
Whoa. So you turned off one of the lamps.
I turned off one of the lamps, and you can see how we suddenly lost, evenness. So the main thing is that using scopes means that you can very quickly, as I move this in real time.
Oh wow!
I can see what I'm doing. So if it's like this to start with, I can go, oh, I just need to move it up like this. If you use the math on the scopes, you can usually even out a green screen in a matter of minutes. Whereas if you're trying to do trying to do it any other way, it becomes very difficult.
Wow.
I don't know, to be honest with you, we've been doing this for so long, I don't know how you would do it any other way. We won't set up a green screen without having scopes open.
That's a pro tip right there.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's kind of the key to the operation as far as figuring that out. And when you get used to knowing what you're looking at, I mean, this is just the values of this across the screen. This is just brightness values here, and this is brightness values split up into the red, green, and blue. If you're not using a green bulb, you're not going to have this red and blue so low. The reason this red and blue is so low is because we're using green bulbs. Typically, they'll be a little higher otherwise. The second key, one of the things you'll see here is, so you have we have an even background that we've lit well. The next thing is that you'll notice that we're lighting ourselves separately from the background. So a lot of people try to light both of them at the same time. That is very hard. So lighting both of them at the same height, because now I have to worry about our exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You notice how quickly I was like, oh, this is a little too bright, and I'm just going to bring down the exposure a little bit. That works great. For the background. But now what happens if I'm now underexposed? So now I have a whole other problem. If we have these lights out here lighting you and I, we can now continually independently light that area. While we just worry about our exposure, whether we diffuse it some more, move these lights back. We can make all those decisions. Like I can look in these scopes here and I can see, we're not really peaking. We might be a little bit overexposed, but we're pretty close. So I can look at these scopes and decide. And a lot of times what we'll do is we'll take out a chart and set it here that's got black, white, and gray, and we'll look at the scope. And we'll go, okay, that's what, you know, that's the right exposure for the front. You know, but all of that's separate. Now, the other thing you'll notice is that we're really far away from the green screen. You can't always do that. But when you can, the further away from the green screen you can get, the less spill you're going to have. So we want, and it also means that we're in two different light fields. So that's really one whole light field over there. This is another whole light field over here. These aren't bleeding very much onto those. So we have two independent spaces. Obviously, not everyone's got 12 feet high and 25 feet wide to build a green screen. If you do, I would highly suggest it. Even, you know, I mean, you just have one in your house, you know, just paint one wall.
I've crammed a small green screen studio in about a room that's 10 by 10. And the distance you want, I maybe got 5 feet away from there. There was spill problems. Had to have a wide angle lens because you're really compressed. If you have the luxury of a long room, if you've got a long room you don't know what to do with, use it for green screen, maybe crop out the edges.
Well, for a long time, we had a room that was about 12 feet wide, but it was like 60 feet long in San Francisco. And we just painted one of the walls green. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, there's a company called Composite Components, and if you go to digitalgreenscreen.com, it'll look like the website was made in 1999. I think that's when they made it, and I don't think they've changed it since. But everybody in the industry uses their paint and their Lycra for their green screen. So separating these out, and then after that, it's as far as setting up your green screen, if you do those basic things, you're going to find that almost any keyer does pretty well.
And so as long as you do, if you do all this work, you're right, any keyer would do it. If you have, I don't know, a big variation in greens. We talked about DB Garage. You guys had a plug-in for Final Cut that I actually I bought myself. I was like, this is so cool because my green screen didn't look like this, and that's exactly why I keep showing up like a moth here because it's just so pretty.
Yeah.
But you're going to be doing it now in production or you'll be doing it in post-production with plug-ins and things like that to take care of it. Any suggestions or like mistakes to avoid apart from being really close? What else should people be looking out for?
I mean, obviously the main thing is that don't make the keyer work harder than it needs to. So one of the things that you can do is if you've got vignetting on the outer edges and the person never goes over those edges, garbage mat that out. You know, so just draw some lines around it and get rid of that and make that all pure green. Like sample the green that's the green you're going to key, make a solid behind it and just garbage that out so that just goes out to plain green. So when you run the keyer, you're only keying stuff, and a lot of keyers will let you set up some garbage mats and so on and so forth. But if it doesn't, just do something that's going to cut out the areas. Remember that the only thing that you care about is the edge. So the closer you can get to the edge, you know, the better. Another thing that you can do is there are some tools that will let you take a clean, what's called a clean plate. In fact, here's a little trick for you. If you're using iMovie, all the way down to iMovie.
Like the new version, the one that looks like a child's toy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it turns out that iMovie has a very robust keyer built into it. So you can actually lay a pin down in iMovie to set your clean frame, and then you can run the keyer. And the keyer, what a clean frame does, it says, okay, I've got all this variation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use one frame without you in it. So you get out of it, and so basically, when you're shooting the green screen, you should always do this, by the way.
It's like, get out of the shot.
Always at the end of your shot or the beginning of your shot, leave the shot. So you always have one version of that of the same camera, same lighting, that moment, and you have a clean plate. Because that clean plate can be used by a lot of keyers, including iMovie, to correct the screen.
Oh, wow.
So it'll take those two, and it'll say, I know that this should be green, and it wasn't, so I'll just correct it so that it's there, even when I come back in. And so you'll get and then that will improve the key dramatically. And so you can do that, as I said, all the way down to iMovie will let you do that. And so obviously there's other keying tools that are stronger than iMovie's, but iMovie's isn't too bad. Final Cut's got a great one built into it now. Obviously, you have Keylight that's built into After Effects, and I believe Premiere. So there's a lot of different options, you know, there. You know, and then there's, of course, Primat, which is a great, what we call a geometric keyer. You're building a shape in 3D space that selects the green. So you have a lot of power when you're doing the Primat keyer. So there's a lot of different ways of attacking that problem.
The biggest cheat I've ever found, keep your hands in your body. don't put your fingers out like this. A lot of people like to make wild gestures. I'm one of those people. And if your key isn't that great, that's where the edging starts showing up really poorly.
Yeah, you'll see webbing. You'll see any kind of webbing. Anytime, and that's really where your spill isn't working. So when you see it like this, that means your spill correction isn't working as well. And so the key is definitely not to do that unless you have a good spill suppression. And so the other thing that makes your keys a lot harder is people like to do full body stuff. Anything knee up is really pretty easy. Knee down is much harder. So you just have to know that if you've got the budget and the time and the effort and the willingness, then doing a then doing all the way to the feet is great, but it's going to be a lot more work because it's just impossible at that point to have a perfectly clean screen.
That was just epically educational. We're gonna take some of these techniques and apply it to a future project as well. It's something smaller, something maybe in my garage.
Yeah.
Something that won't look as pretty as this, and I won't be attracted to the garage the same way, but still, this is amazing. Alex, thank you so much for all that information. Fantastic. Yeah. I love it here. It's so awesome.
Thank you, Ayaz and Alex. Those are absolutely fantastic tips for anyone who tries to do some green screening. Now, in a future episode of Know How, I'm going to show you, I'd say, a less advanced way to do it, but an easier way to do it inside Adobe Premiere. But before we get to that, let's take another moment to thank another one of our sponsors. And, of course, that's Hulu Plus. Now, you've probably tried Hulu.com, but Hulu Plus is so much more. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Hulu Plus lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and movies in the living room or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite TV shows like Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, Family Guy, Saturday Night Live, The Shield. Watch every episode of shows like Lost, Doctor Who, Community, and Star Trek. You can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu originals like The Wrong Mans and Behind the Mask, Hulu's new docuseries that takes you inside the world of sports mascots. You also get access to a collection of ad-free movies and kids' content. It is one of the best things that you can do if you ever need to keep your kids entertained on a long trip. And for only $7.99 a month, you can catch up on current shows, binge on old favorites, or catch a great movie. Stream as many TV shows and movies as you want, wherever you want. Hulu is all about giving you the entertainment that you want on the device that you need. Right now, you can try Hulu Plus free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/knowhow. That's a special offer for our listeners. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/knowhow so you can get the extended free trial and so that they know that we sent you. We thank Hulu Plus for their support of TWiT and hope you enjoy watching your content of choice. Now, a few weeks back, we gave you a challenge. We told the chat room to take some green screen footage of Ayaz and Alex and, well, do whatever you could. And we've got a know-it-all to show you what you came up with. Now, Brian, tell me what's first. Who do we got on the docket?
So, first, we have Steve Lieseman, and here's his green screen challenge.
Okay, I get it. Running from Windows. Okay. Nice. And yes. See, it's all about the ending. You got to finish strong. Who's next?
All right, next up, we have Joe Kunha.
A building explosion. All right, run it.
Let's see what we got.
Playing with speed. See, we just talked about this.
Everything's cooler in slow motion.
Everything is cooler in slow motion. And thank you for blowing up that building. It was an eyesore.
All right, next up.
Okay.
Oh, we really sped it up there.
All right,
quiet, Joe. Next, we have Dirty Harry from CM Darty. Darty?
Wow, you whippersnappers. Yeah, I would run from that, too. I like the imaginativeness.
You think they're feeling lucky?
I do. Oh.
All right, now.
Yes, I really like this
Mr.
one.
Mr. Geekface. This one you really have to look closely, because he did such a good job of blending them in.
Wait, here? No, there. No, wait. Oh, here. No, wait. See, that's the movie magic. You don't slap people with it in the face like a dead fish.
Mm-hmm.
You make them look for it. Did you catch him? Did you? Wait, let's go. Come on. There. Oh, well done. Very well done.
Yeah.
You, sir, win the Doge coins.
Well, hold on. That's not the only one he sent.
Oh, wait.
Now, this was the best one that I think Ayaz agreed on. So let's take a look at this. We gotta watch that again.
That's actually pretty, and he even blurred them out when the focus shifted.
He blurs them out, he speeds them up, and he separates them.
That's really good.
Yeah, so props to Mr. Geekface.
Mr. Geekface, you win. You know, there is no competition. We love all our know-it-alls, but if there was a competition, you would totally have dominated it. Thank you to everyone who sent in submissions, to everyone who posted to our G Plus community. It was a lot of fun to see what you could do with green screens. And now that we know that you know how to play with them, we're probably going to do a lot more. Let us know who you want to see in the next green screen plate. Now, there is something that I want to tell you before we leave, and that is this is the last episode that we're going to have this year. Next week is a best of, and in the new year, we're actually moving. We're going to be moving to 12:30 Pacific time on Thursdays. We're just kind of reconfiguring our schedule in order to make room for some of the new shows, including a show that I've heard is going to be awesome, featuring Snubs and some other guy called Coding 101. So remember, Thursdays, 12:30 Pacific time. Also, did you know that we've got a G Plus page? That's right. If you go to gplus.to/twitkh, you'll find a very active community. We're in there all the time, Ayaz and myself, and it's not just us. We've got the know-it-alls on the case. If you have a request for an episode, if you've got something that you'd really like to see on the show, or if you have a question for the know-it-alls, we've got people asking about routers, about cameras, about projects that they're doing. It's a really good place to find a bit of advice from your fellow geek. We've got over 5,000 subscribers right now, so please jump in gplus.to/twitkh and let us know what you think about the show or give us some ideas for new shows. That's not the only way to contact us, by the way. You could reach us at knowhow@twit.tv. If you email us, specifically email us with torture that you'd like to see us give to Greg, because he's the guy that writes the nice artwork behind us. I will be sure to pay attention to that, and I will give it first priority. Also, did you know that you could reach us on the Twitters? Yeah, we're not just a one social media platform kind of show. We don't have an account, although you can reach me at PadreSJ. But if you write something with hashtag, that's hashtag TwitKH, we will try to get back to you as soon as we can. I think that about does it. Yeah. We've had a full show. We've shown you about green screens. We've shown you about keyframing. We've shown you about speed and how to take your video file out. Speaking of that, I'm Father Robert Ballas there, and once now you know, go do it.